Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to On the Bench. I am your host for today's episode, Brendan Sinone, joined by a special guest, Adam Fuller, Florida State's defensive coordinator. Adam, welcome to On the Bench. I got a very important question for you, kind of a hardball. You ready for it? Start off with a little chin music here.
Bring it.
Have you seen Top Gun yet?
The first one or the new one?
The new one. Hopefully you've seen the first one.
No, I have definitely not seen the second one.
All right. Well, I was going to ask you if you know what your call sign would be, since that's a marketing ploy that you're using. I just did mine, and I'm Superstar would be my call sign. So you probably don't know what yours would be, but we can take a stab at it. What would your call sign be if you were up in a pilot, or if you're a pilot in a fighter jet?
Like, this is really bad. I don't even know what is a call sign.
A call sign. So like Maverick was Tom Cruise's call sign, or Goose, RIP Goose, was the call sign for the guy who died in the first one. A spoiler alert.
Right.
So, What about like mongoose? Like, you're better than a goose. You're a mongoose. You're tense.
I get you.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'll kind of let you choose it. You sound really good at this game. I'll kind of let you. I don't have a great answer. I don't know. I'm lost in that one.
Let's go with mongoose. I'm going to go with mongoose. You're going to be mongoose because okay. You're ferocious. You're intense. So I'm going to call you mongoose the rest of the episode. No, I'm just messing with you. All right. So, okay. So I got a broad question for you, Adam. I'm going to start with this. What is from you guys wrapping up spring, if you can look at it like where you are just a couple months ago from when you first got here and started taking over the defense? Again, this is broad, but what is the biggest difference now from when you first took over the defense that you can see?
I think there's no question. You know, I actually just got off the practice field just about 15 minutes ago, and just the ownership that they show, the willingness and want to get it right. And, you know, there's just, you never overlook details or discipline or just how you do things, but it's just the operation. There's just the expectations are higher across the board from the first group to the third group to the coaches. And so it just, you know, it's the atmosphere of winning and development is just at a better operational level right now, for sure.
And going off that, Adam, so just like when we would talk to you in the spring, I sense from you just confidence, like more increased confidence with your team, the way you talked about your defense. And even as you're talking about them now, just you seem very at peace with where you guys are going, the direction you're going. Is that, am I misreading that? Or are you feeling like better about where you guys are at?
Yeah, I mean, we have 16 guys on defense that have started a football game here at Florida State. Not just played, but started a game. I think we've got seven others that have played over 100 snaps or have started college football at another school. So you're basically saying you have 24, 25 players that have all played a lot of football. And, you know, some of that wasn't great. You know, for our first year here, there were guys playing that were probably playing a little bit too early, but you know, now they're going into year three. And so, you know, experience is a factor, especially if your physical development and your mental development comes with experience, you know, and I think that's all part of being a competitive football team and being a competitive defense. And you know, I feel a lot more confident about knowing the players and knowing what positions we're putting them in, what they can do, what they cannot do. And now you can focus on the newcomers of now fitting them into a scheme or putting them in positions to succeed. And, you know, so that's where my confidence comes in. And I have a better confidence that I know how we'll react every day. Is it, you know, 100% where you want it? No, I don't think it ever will be, but I feel a lot more confident that I can push the right buttons and act, just be ourselves and let our guys react in a positive way. So, you know, you're reading it correctly, because I feel confident in the returning group that we have.
I recall a press conference last year, and I can't remember after what game it was, but you discussed, and I thought it was really telling, was that there were points in, say, like the 2020 season, like when you guys would show film cut-ups of a certain scheme or technique, where you were having to use like other teams or previous ones because it hadn't been done yet at Florida State since you guys had been there. And that changed, obviously, in 2021. I guess how profound like is that to have that sort of change and evolution like right in front of you, to where guys are seeing things, buying into things, and then executing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's real. I mean, that first year, you know, there was no spring practice. So you're in fall camp, you're going into game one, and you're still showing film of other defenses. Whether it's where I had coached in the past, or, you know, there wasn't any tape of them executing things. And, you know, as we put last spring under our belt and then rode into fall camp, and now we've got a full season. And, you know, now all of a sudden, even the things you put on the walls of meeting rooms, players know what those words mean. You know, when you say set the edge, it seems pretty generic, but like they can picture it and spit it out to you and watch it on film and say that's what it looks like. And so, you know, all those little things mean something, and just, you know, those things are mounting up, you know, where we feel confident about the foundation.
And when you guys first got here, I remember there was like a good deal of discussion about, I guess, the number of players like at certain positions, how you allocate scholarships, depth, those kind of things. Now, you know, with multiple recruiting classes in, and is that kind of where you want to be, that balance of how many defensive players you have at each position?
We're there. I mean, it's, you know, we've got a set number at each position. Really, you know, you can look at and see how many DBs play, how many D linemen play, how many linebackers play. And then you just put that into what a season of football would look like, and special teams included. And then you allocate the scholarships based off that. And you get into, once you hit that number, now it's a lot easier to manage your roster, because you can kind of take a picture of, okay, after this season, you know, he's going to graduate. He's a draftable player. Mm-hmm. His clock will expire. And now you can go fill the roster. And, you know, it helps out on building things. It helps players get better because they know exactly where they stand. You know, they know they're a second team player and they'll play on third downs, and this is the reason why. Then they work on their weaknesses and keep playing to their strengths. And, you know, just the communication line, the factory line of who you're going to recruit, what it's going to look when you bring them in, you know, all that stuff is fits into a system now. And it helps organization for coaches and players.
How often is that evolving or changing? So like, I asked that because I read something the other day that basically said, like, this past year in college football, two tight end sets were used the most as they have in, like, say, like a 5-6 year span. And I wish I had the percentage of how often that was used. But so I guess, how often are you guys, like, that was just a 1 year sample set. How often are you looking at those kind of metrics, trends, and saying, all right, do we have to get an extra linebacker next year? Yeah. Or so how does that work?
Well, I think now going into year three in the ACC, you know, you've got a good sense of, you know, what each team, you can kind of define each team, and just even the 12 personnel sets, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean when people put two tight ends on the field that you've got to create five down sets or even three backer sets. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there are a lot of two tight end sets that they just say they're two tight ends, but it plays like 11 personnel more. So, you know, at this point, you know, we feel pretty confident. We will dual train the middle of the defense players, like safeties as linebackers, whether it's third down or whether it's base defense, just in case, you know, injuries happen, you know, but you can do that now because our guys feel confident in the base system. They feel confident about how they need to react. And now you can work on secondary positions. And so, you know, just going into year three and going into year three with a lot of the players and just a lot of returning starters, it allows you to build on concepts. And, you know, the meetings become a lot more communication back and forth than teacher student.
You mentioned secondary positions. I'm curious, just like, do you have a view of an ideal or prototypical nickel cornerback for
your
team?
I mean, our nickels in a perfect way, you know, we're going to call defense based on who the nickel is. Mm-hmm. So if it isn't this person, I don't throw my hands and say, oh, we can't play defense. But, you know, guys like Kevin Knowles and, you know, even Kevin Knowles and Jamie Robinson, who are the two nickels, you know, last year, you know, they're different type of mm-hmm. players, but they both have really good quickness. They have a really good sense of space and pace. And I say that just because you align closer to the box. So you've got to have a better feel on leverage, splits, rub routes, you know, things of that nature. But I would say if we have a bigger, more physical nickel, then we're probably using him a little bit more in the front. With guys like Kevin, it allows us to match up on the perimeter a little bit easier, as a general way of saying. So, you know, the more coverage you have at that position, you know, the more you can use your safeties in the run fit, the more bigger physical you are at that position, you know, probably the more aggressive you're going to play him glued to the box. So, you know, in a perfect world, you want a guy that can do both and then use it 50-50 so that they have to react to you and not plan for you.
Speaking of Kevin, both Kevin and Duke Cooper, last year was kind of baptism by fire, so to speak. Like, they both had, you know, got thrown in the mix and sink or swim, and they both seemed to swim and then got better as the year went on. I guess now going into year two for them, I guess, what's the expectation and what have you seen from them in terms of growth?
Well, the expectation for them is them to be two of the better DBs in the ACC. You play DB at Florida State, you need to be one of the better players in the conference and in the country. You know, if you're a starter here at Florida State, and that's not just reflected in game time, that's reflected in preparation time and how you act on and off the football field. And I think they're both, you know, had some really good moments last year and, you know, a lot of teaching opportunities. And they're both emotionally mature players that care a lot about the team. And usually those mindsets get a lot better quickly. And I saw growth in the spring for both of them. And I see a lot of leadership examples from Kevin. Duke's somebody that wants to be coached and, you know, likes to be coached. And you see responses really quickly with Duke. So I'm happy with both of them. And, you know, even Shaheem Brown, who's in that recruiting class, you know, probably didn't impact the football team on the field on game day as much as those two, but I think his time's coming and this will be a critical year for him.
Did the light kind of start to flick on for Shaheem this spring?
Yeah, I don't know if the light was ever off. I think sometimes, sure. You know, when you come in, you know, everybody thinks they're going to be the greatest player that we've ever seen at Florida State and they're going to be dominant. That's part of having a swagger to be able to play at this level. You know, and then when it hits you that, like, wow, I got a lot of work to do, you know, just the consistency of that response is usually going to expedite how quickly you play. And, you know, also this too, you know, it's harder to play safety as a freshman than it is to play corner because things are coming at you from both sides. You know, to be a removed player, even, you know, a corner, a nickel, or an end to a defensive tackle, or an outside linebacker to an inside linebacker, you know, when things just come at you one way, it's easier to play faster early. When you're in the middle of the defense, it's harder. There's just more things that you have to react to. So it becomes more difficult. I'm not saying freshmen can't play safety early or can't play linebacker. It's just a lot easier to, when I say mentally and from a development standpoint, it's easier to play on the outside.
That makes sense. So I got a general scheme football question from Coach AB, who's with our X's and Noles channel. And he's a big fan of the tight three-man fronts that are becoming popular with some defenses in the country. Just, I want to get your thoughts on, like, I know you study all sorts of schemes and whatnot, just the pros and cons of going with that kind of front that some teams use.
Of what was the front? Explain it better so I can give you a better answer.
The tight three-man fronts. I think it's like a lot of the 3-2-6 stuff that, say, like Clemson's doing or Georgia.
Yeah. So, like, just you talking about like zeros and head up fours or just three down fronts?
Yeah, just three down fronts.
Yeah, I think there's a place for it. You know, it's all, I really think it's what your, you know, what your backers can do versus what your ends can do. Like, you know, and, you know, when in my past, especially on third downs, we played a lot more three down, and some of with four down linemen on the field, and use your Fox to be more of a hybrid player. You know, last year, you know, I think both Keir and Jermaine were very much, their strength was to play on the line of scrimmage. They could do other things. But we made a decision that what they were really good at was what we were going to do more. And, you know, it didn't make a sense. Like, there was a lot parts of your scheme that you could say, okay, this is what we can do, but this is what we're going to be better at. And so it went that direction. So, you know, some of these 3-2 stuff, you know, there's three safety defenses that you can play out of that stuff. There's four across stuff that you could play with split safety. You know, I just, you know, for us, with how we're recruiting right now, you know, we're going to recruit at a high level at defensive line because of, we're going to put them in one-on-one situations, and we're going to allow them on third down to be the pass rushers. We're going to have scheme rushers, but we want to recruit pass rush. And yes, it doesn't mean you're not going to create rush with scheme, but if we're going to go out there and recruit the best defensive lineman in the country to let them go attack the pocket and attack TFLs, then we're going to make sure when they turn the film on that they're going to see us do that. And I think it's your way to get these guys ready for the next level, but it's also your way to, I think, find the best talented defensive lineman in the country when you can sell a scheme to them, but then actually show it to them on film and you know, allow them to be the guys that impact the pocket. So, you know, listen, we have some linebackers that we think can rush the passer, but if they don't do it as well as the guys we have that do it all the time, then we're not going to force them to do it. And, you know, same thing when it comes down to playing coverage. You know, we're going to play, you know, with linebackers on the field when we get matchups that we feel like we got to make substitutions and play with more DBs, and we'll do it. If we feel like we can play with three linebackers on the field and execute better, then we're going to do that too. So, you know, I try to not to be pigeonholed to saying we're only going to be this, but, you know, last year our Fox position went more to a true weak side defensive end because of what Keir was. And, you know, I think I'm open-ended to what that can be based off how we continue to recruit. I think when you recruit guys that can do more things well, then you're going to do more with that position. And that's kind of to give my answer into that.
Oh, that's interesting. And one other thing that you said in the answer, Adam, that kind of stuck out to me was designing like one-on-ones for your pass rushers, getting them in one-on-one situations. And I hear that like offensive coaches talk about getting their skill guys in one-on-one situations. So like as a defensive coordinator, what does that look like? How do you go about figuring out, oh, this is the match we want and guaranteeing that you get a guy in that spot?
That's a really good question because, you know, I talked to Mike about this and, you know, there are offensive coaches that get a receiver in a one-on-one and it's his job to win it. You hear that a lot. Like, well, we got him in a one-on-one, but when a defensive end beats an offensive tackle in a one-on-one, they say, well, that offensive tackle needs to do a better job. Well, part of it is, you know, scheme isn't just offensive coaches getting defensive players in one-on-ones. Sometimes it's our job to get them in one-on-ones. You know, it's a bad day when a back needs to block a defensive lineman in a pass rush. And, you know, it's our job as defensive coaches to make sure, you know, wherever the matchups are weak, then create less one-on-ones. Wherever they're strong, create a lot of one-on-ones so you can push your numbers to the weakness. And, you know, I think you want to be structured as a defense that you're rigid enough that your guys can tell the new players that come in, this is how we play defense. But then fluid enough that when you come to game plans that you can move your scheme around to take advantage of the positive matchups, but also assist in the matchups that you think you could be less. And have a team first attitude so that when you do it, the player that's getting the help doesn't take it as a knock. He takes it on, this is how we have to win the game. And that's part of creating team atmosphere.
Super fascinating. Last question for you. You mentioned the Fox position, and one guy who I wanted to talk about because we didn't get to talk about him a ton during the spring, and that's Dennis Briggs. And he was having such a good season last year before the injury. I guess, what does he bring to the table, and what is his upside as like this, I guess, hybrid defensive end?
Yeah. Well, Dennis was on his way to having a really good year last year as a defensive tackle. And, you know, we evaluated the roster at the end of the year. I feel really confident, you know, about Robert Cooper, Fabian Lovett, Jarrett Jackson, Malcolm Ray, the development of Josh Farmer, and then the two young guys in Bishop and Daniel that we recruited. So, you know, we want to have, you know, approximately seven defensive tackles on scholarship that can all contribute in various ways. And so it gave us the ability to move Dennis back out because I thought we needed some veteran presence out there. We have some really good young players, when we've got some veterans coming back, but I thought that's where we should shift, you know, Dennis, because I thought athletically he could handle it, number one. And then I thought our depth inside allowed us to make the move. So, you know, I think putting Dennis out there, I think he brings a lot of the same things Kier brought to us, a bigger body that's got, you know, the requisite athleticism that he can, you know, play there. You know, you put a guy like that, you know, into the short side of the field so he has less space plays to make, but he's athletic enough to make the space plays into the boundary. And so I think Dennis will bring a lot of things that Kier brought, but they are slightly different. So he'll bring some different skills that Kier maybe didn't have, and Kier had some things that maybe Dennis doesn't have. But I think it rounds out our defensive line roster and our personnel better. It makes us a better defense and a better team to kick Dennis out there.
All right, Adam, those are all the questions I had for right now. This has been super insightful, interesting. I learned things. My listeners will as well. So really appreciate the time, sir. This is awesome.
Anytime. Anything to help out you guys, and appreciate your support of the Noles.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Go Noles.
See you guys. Go Noles.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.